Welcome back to Offworld, the show where we talk about all things space exploration and pop culture. I'm Ariel Waldman.
And I'm Norm Chan. Ariel, the movie you guys chose for this week is The Beyond. I confess I have not seen it. Does that matter for this conversation?
Not really. The Beyond was a small indie film and, you know, it's got its problems like any other film, but we quickly talk about cyborgs in space generally. So that's what was really exciting about today's conversation and talking with Amber Case, who is our guest, and we had Tested's Kishore on, and it was an interesting conversation for sure.
All right, well, let's take a listen.
So today I'm with Amber Case and Kishore, Tested's very own. Welcome.
Excited to be here.
Nice to be here.
Amber, can you explain a little bit about what you do? I've heard you called a cyborg anthropologist.
Sure. When I was in college, I learned that there was a subsection of the anthropology of science called cyborg anthropology. And I was growing up as a kid just doing tech and science and math and being a big fan of that. And then I wanted to major in that in college, and I called my mom's best friend up, who was a math professor, and she said, maybe you should learn something about the humanities, maybe some anthropology, liberal arts, go to a liberal arts school, learn a little bit more about people if you want to make really good tech for them. So I went to a liberal arts college, and I found that there was this field called cyborg anthropology, and I immediately said, this is what I want to be, this is what I want to study. I wrote my thesis on cell phones, and I read the Cyborg Handbook as a textbook, and we got to learn all about cyborgs and space and where the word cyborg came from.
That sounds way better than my chemistry textbooks in college. But like, what does a cyborg anthropologist actually, like, what do they study?
Sure. Well, actually, one of my professors was one of two anthropologists hired to be on the Human Genome Project. She was studying the interaction between science networks. So Bruno Latour has this thing called actor network theory, that we're actors on networks of humans and non-human subjects. And one of those non-human subjects is information. And so she was studying how information flows through different communities. Cyborg anthropology has been applied to hospitals and childbirth. It has been applied to space travel. It's been applied to a few different things. I'm trying to apply it to the non-human allies or unallies that are on our pockets, that are phones, that cry, and we have to pick them up and soothe them back to sleep. They get hungry, and we have to plug them into the wall, and the interfaces of them take our attention. They're kind of like the new cigarettes. So the interesting thing about it is that most of the time we think of cyborg as Terminator or RoboCop, and that's kind of the problem. You know, there's this cinematic idea of the cyborg, that it's automatically a military concept, but actually the word cyborg came from a 1960 paper on space travel. And the definition is that it's any organism to which exogenous components are added for the purpose of adapting to new ambient spaces.
Sounds like a paper.
It's a paper. Kleins and Klein, 1960, and really just means anybody who puts a spacesuit on is a cyborg. But even more, if you put flippers on and go into the ocean as a scuba diver, or if you put on an oxygen tank so you can climb Mount Everest, you're adding something to your external self to adapt to a new environment. And that's really what humans are doing every day. And so we're all cyborgs. A lot of the cyborg development has been a physical extension of yourself, like a hammer is an extension of your fist, or a knife is an extension of your teeth. But now we have these mental extensions of ourselves, and that's an unstable media. Phones are changing shape and size, and now you can fold them, and it's not really settled. And so this kind of mental extension of ourself allows us to click a button and hear across the world, but it's really based on the idea of extending ourselves and being part of this like larger organism.
Yeah, well, I mean, I love that the sort of beginning of the word cyborg came from space exploration. So that's what we're actually talking about today, is cyborgs in space. And we all watched one of the, perhaps the most recent film about cyborgs in space, specifically The Beyond, which was made in 2017, little indie film, not very well known, but I thought that film was a good jumping off point for us to talk about sort of cyborgs and how they're depicted. Kishore, also, I wanted to hear from you, like, what's your definition of like cyborgs when it comes to pop culture, I guess.
Well, first of all, it's cyborgs in space, yeah. Right? With like eight A's. I mean, I'm a victim of the Hollywood depictions of cyborgs. So I think of like sci-fi shows where it's a merge of biology and technological machinery together into something that is like this merged new kind of creature all into itself. And so I oftentimes think of cyborg in the concept of humanoid, which is not, I think, always the way we have to think about it when it comes to science. So I kind of love the definition of what you're saying, which is like much more of a augmentation than it is just like this complete merging of the two depictions. But yeah, I'm stuck in that RoboCop Terminator mindset.
Yeah, well, like in the beyond, so let's break down like what we actually saw depicted. We saw it was essentially a military operation where they had figured out how to remove a brain from a human and put it into essentially a robo exoskeleton of sorts. And so they were doing this in the military, but then NASA decided, hey, let's try this out for some civilian astronauts, because there's a weird wormhole that appeared in the sky, and the only way to safely send a human is to remove their brain from their body and put them into an exoskeleton.
I actually thought this was one of the more believable components of the movie, where people like immediately volunteered to become this hybrid and to explore the frontier in this kind of way. That struck me as just totally true, and it rings with like the idea of people wanting to go on one-way missions to Mars. But this like hybrid where you're basically there's basically a character that's a doctor that's like, well, we take out their brain and we plug it into this suit and body, and then but there was a lot more sort of like it's imperfect, and like there's a lot of like reconstruction of like memories, and like you have to learn how to walk again in this suit that I thought was actually really functionally interesting.
Yeah, I was looking at this sci-fi story recently called The Golden Eagle, The Tale of the Golden Eagle. And what I liked about it is that they took the brain of a golden eagle and put it into the ship, into the spaceship. And the golden eagle was very agile and understood how to pilot it really well. So it was a human plus the brain of a golden eagle working side by side to
wow.
explore space. And through the story, which I think you can find on Escape Pod, which one of my favorite science fiction podcasts, it had this golden eagle just getting transferred out into different places all like through, I don't know, 1,000 years, right? So you have this brain's life that has been artificially extended and is accumulating memories and is quite intelligent at this point and doesn't like to be confined to a certain body. Like it really liked being in the spaceship body because it was able to go anywhere, but then it gets confined to these different bodies. And so in a way, the question is, if you take a human brain out and you put it into this kind of indestructible body, what happens? Like, I know that there are a lot of people who say, I want to upload my brain, but aren't a lot of what we experience as humans really embodied and embodiment? And what happens if you take away the need to eat, and do you replace it with the need to have electrical power? Does that reduce your humanity? After we saw this person transfer into the cyborg body, there was a lot that was kind of removed from them. Like they just seemed kind of plain. The kind of humanity had been taken out. And I don't know whether it's great or not. I think in terms of like health and recovery, one of the people that volunteered for this was in a wheelchair, and they really wanted to be able to move around again. And I think if we look at kind of the cyborg level, the thing that's really invisible is the norm, and that norm changes over time. So everybody has a video camera in their pockets, and it's not really a big deal. But 15 years ago, that would have been terrifying. And anything that restores you to that norm, like eyeglasses restoring you to the current accepted idea of 20/20 vision or a prosthetic leg, that's not scary. That's restorative. But anything above that becomes enhancing, and that's scary. And that's, I think, where we get all the RoboCop and Terminator type stuff. So I think if somebody is, let's say, confined to a wheelchair and they don't like it, then they could have this exoskeleton that allows them to walk again. Then, you know, in a way, is it enhancing or is it restorative? And I think volunteering for that is different versus here's a really risky procedure, but you're in perfect health. So I think there's kind of this different thing. And then also there's kind of these cultures that go along with, you know, the deaf community, for instance, has an incredible culture around sign language. And not everybody wants to get an implant in their ears that allows them to hear again, because that culture goes away. And one of the cool things about sign language is you can have your mouth completely full or be across an auditorium from somebody and still sign across the room. There's something super neat about that whole culture. So you have to ask, like, is this something that able-bodied people would voluntarily want to do? I think there's always this kind of portion of humanity that wants to do this. But I do think if we go to space, we are going to need to have some radiation shielding and some mechanisms that we either attach or attach permanently, or some CRISPR type stuff that prevents us from having crazy mutations or muscle loss or, you know, bone density loss. And right now, as humans, I don't think unaided or unpermanently aided we're really fit for space, even though, you know, many of us will volunteer to go to Mars for sure, one way, absolutely.
people did volunteer for that on the failed Mars One experiment.
Absolutely.
What did you think of the concept of sending a cyborg instead of just like a straight robot?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it certainly comes up a lot, what Amber was talking about in terms of like genetic enhancement and are we, you know, is the path forward going to be, you know, injecting ourselves with stuff to protect us from radiation versus actually building, you know, radiation safe walls? And, you know, I think the jury is still out on that. There's certainly like a creep factor to it for a lot of people, but the reality sort of where we are is we don't have really great radiation protection external to the human body, but we also don't have knowledge of how to make humans less prone to radiation either. So, you know, space exploration, I think, operates a lot off of breakthroughs rather than like in biology or other areas where you have slightly like an exponential factor of like getting better and better, getting faster and faster. Space exploration is pretty much have a breakthrough, optimize the crap out of that breakthrough for decades, and wait around until there's another breakthrough which changes the game, which we never know when is going to happen. You know, that's what sort of happened with the start of space exploration and human spaceflight. Before missiles were essentially created in the 1940s, human spaceflight was still a dream. So, you know, it wasn't until the 1940s that things started to be really possible. So I think, yeah, with cyborgs, like, I think they could be a possibility for space exploration. But we definitely get into a lot of consideration of how much do we need humans to explore versus robots, which I always, you know, am in the middle of, like, I want humans and robots exploring together.
Absolutely.
But are they going to merge? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing, especially like in the construction industry, in the military industry, in the space exploration industry, is we're having some bots out there and probes, but it will really be humans working alongside machines and aided by machines. And if we look at kind of a middle future, we'll have some people with a slight exoskeleton that allows them to lift space rocks or something, but then we'll also have unmanned or unhumaned probes. Unhumaned probes. That sounds terrible.
Let's do unhumaned. Yeah.
Unhumaned.
I like that.
Unpeopled probes.
Yeah, the robotic probes, yes.
There we go. Robotic probes. Thank you. I was also thinking about different ideas of the future and spacesuits. And I don't know if you've heard of this term cosmotechnics.
But, no.
Okay, so this is a cool concept. It's the idea that, you know, we have this kind of idea of what we developed for space travel. And in a way, it's very Western and we have all this extra stuff that we put on. But it ignores, like, what would happen if, you know, there was a future from, let's say, the Philippines, or there was a future from like India or Afrofuturism, like all of these other concepts of how we would go to space and how you would develop scientifically and all these different kinds of future. Like, what would happen if somebody took their culture and they put that into space travel? And so I've actually been to a bunch of different like Afrofuturist exhibits on like how a spacesuit would be made. And it's way more interesting than like conventional space travel, where you just add all this stuff and it's kind of difficult and it's not very elegant. These are like, you know, you have an organism inside the helmet that cleans your air for you, right? There's a lot of like growing a spacesuit. You have no right angles on anything. Like there's recovery. There's these like organisms that work with you. There's these bacteria you can eat. Like there's all sorts of special things. And I think that's why we should really think about cosmotechnics, because if we just have like one worldview on how spacesuits should be built, then we miss out on ideas that have evolved from 5,000 to 2 million years worth of alternative futures from people in different cultures and countries and histories and backgrounds that are not the typical background that we think of being very funded and very official.
Right.
And I think it's really special. Like there's way more interesting stuff that I hope we can bring into the future, especially with like biohacking and stuff like that.
This is totally blowing my mind. Well, like, because like the picture,
you're a bio nerd.
No, it's also like I'm stuck in this frame of reference where it's like there's a certain way that we send stuff into space that's like clinical, and it has this sort of like type of engineering applied to it.
Yeah.
And to like kind of break that apart, like, opens up a whole new idea. And like, even this movie is stuck in some of those frames of reference still.
Yeah. Even though it's a, and I think one of the things about this film that is interesting and a good approach is that it's an indie film, and there needs to be indie films, and there needs to be funding for kind of these unofficial projects done within constraints that maybe the pacing of the film wasn't exactly great, and maybe it didn't resolve properly, and maybe it didn't matter in the whatever. But the fact is that it explored a bunch of things that were a little bit separate from what we usually see explored in like a very highly funded feature film. And we need to have like, I want to see, you know, what a film would look like from Senegal. Like, I want to see what a film would look like from Tasmania. I want to see what an Australian film version of this would look like. What, like, let's have, right now, we need to think really interestingly about how we're going to do this stuff, because we have the ability to grow stuff. We have the ability to engineer stuff. We have, if we're locked into this official 1960s view of what a spacesuit looks like and what space travel looks like, we're missing out on all sorts of cool stuff. Like, what if you used, you know, Venta Black on your spacesuit and it absorbed a lot of the radiation? I love to bring up that because Venta Black is such a complex kind of art object, right?
Yeah.
Being patented by Anish Kapoor and nobody else can use it. And then, you know, but it absorbs all of this light. Or just trying to figure out other materials, like when, you know, just, and also how the space race led to a lot of domestic objects. Like all of the space travel, I feel like we explored internally. Like we put time and space on pause by having refrigerated trucks and photoelectric sensors so that we could have, so that we could have modern shopping markets and things like that. And I think that we can apply all this stuff out in space again. Like we have all the Mylar stuff inside our wrapping papers that we used to go to space, but and like all this plastic that we used to like, and now it's all domestic.
Well, so a question I have about like, you know, cyborgs in space or just cyborgs in general, and something that I think is interesting to explore is like, what is the line for our personal identity with cyborgs? And we see this in Star Trek, we see this in a lot of things, you know, trust seems to be a common problem with cyborgs, where we don't, where like a cyborg, we see it in the movie, like a cyborg experiences something, but maybe we can't trust them, or maybe we can't trust them to be on our side. And, you know, Kishore, like, what is your thoughts on like, you know, in science fiction, like how, where we, like, where is it where a cyborg is one of us, and then where is it where they're not one of us?
I mean, what you're talking about is something that's like prominent now. Like we're having a lot of conversations about trust generally, just human to human, not just like human to robot. And now we're talking about exploring a frontier that's never been explored before in this movie, and the immediate distrust that emerges. And I don't think it would have mattered if it was a robot necessarily versus a cyborg. I think there's like always a sense of paranoia, as one of the characters called it, that I think we see in a lot of science fiction, but we don't necessarily just see in science fiction, we see in science reality. Like there's a paranoia about like this unknown that I think we have to grapple with as we're exploring.
Yeah.
And I think it's like oftentimes we remember some of our great scientific achievements as this sort of like heroic moment, but we sort of ignore the paranoia that emerged around it. And we see it still emerging to this day about like the moon landing still. And so I think that paranoia is what this film gets super right, is they immediately distrust. What I think it gets wrong is, like, on the other side, they're like, we were wrong. Yeah, we should have trusted.
Yeah, show, don't tell. Yeah. First off, it's hard to do. It's hard to do, especially if it's like a new filmmaker working with a lot of people who are unknown. So I think it's hard to make a film. Kudos to the director. I hope to see more of their work because they should just keep going. But it's hard to make a thing. It's really, really hard to make a thing. But I also think that there's this kind of timeline. Like, I think about, it's a very Western-minded thing to automatically panic because maybe there's some colonialism. And so if somebody comes in, they're going to colonize you because you just colonized all these people, right, through history, right? So maybe there's that perspective. But you go to some other countries, like, for instance, in the West, you have schizophrenics that voices tell them to do bad things, and they're very negative. There are some countries where a schizophrenic is considered like this wonderful, lovable person. The voices tell them to play pranks on people and have a good time.
Well, and the definition around schizophrenia is constantly evolving.
Right.
So it's actually been a point of problem because, you know, people use it as a derogatory term towards people, or they misrepresent what someone's actually suffering from.
Right. And, or we could say that, you know, part of it is very cultural. And so maybe part of our initial paranoia, and a lot of Western movies that have like the day the earth stood still and all these things, are the idea that if there are people from outer space, they are immediately supposed to be non-trusted. And a lot of like Star Trek episodes, you have, it is like traditionally this idea that like, then the women are trusting of the thing and the guys are not. And then there's this military idea and da 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 da. And I think this all comes from like early stage plays. You would have like man versus nature, and so, or like man versus man. But then when we had the Industrial Revolution and we had Rossum's Universal Robots come out in like, what was that, 1858 or something? It was the first time we were having man versus machine, and you had to embody machine in the shape of a man and then have it act on stage. And then we took that into film. And so everything has to be like human shaped. And this film didn't have any human shapes. Great. You have Arrival, which this film will be unfavorably compared to, that didn't have human shapes. And of course, you have this very empathetic interpreter, you know, who comes in and tries to translate things. And then the question is, you know, what happens, like, if you are advanced enough as a culture and you go out, are you going to colonize other places, or are you going to collaborate with them, or are you going to save them? We know that colonization and excess resource use might kill us as a species. So maybe that's not actually the solution. Maybe we will encounter a solution. Like, if you've ever played like a real-time strategy game and you are a civilization that uses a lot of resources, you usually win before there's a super end game. But if you keep playing after that, like if nobody wins and you're in a stalemate, the person that has the most renewable resources wins. So the question is, if, you know, if our mindset will change once we realize that we have to like work with the land, and that maybe we shouldn't have destroyed all these indigenous people because they have all of the answers to these things, and that if we're going to go to space, we need to learn how to make renewable stuff in space so that we can't just throw money at it and have it be an industrial thing because it's not renewable. Yeah. And so I like some of these other ideas about space travel for that. And I think if you had, you know, some other culture would probably look at visitors from another place as, heck yeah, visitors from another place, let's have a good time, you know, not
what culture
oh, no.
is that? I want to go hang out with them.
Well, let's find them, right?
Yeah, well,
you know, let's consider a bunch of different perspectives instead of just the one that we have in the films, right? Because it's overboard. And I think we've been so media saturated in these specific narratives that they become tropes, and we really need refreshing perspectives, and we need to have funding for people to make these weirder perspectives.
Well, so I guess my final question for all of us to discuss is, you know, what depictions of cyborgs in film do you think are thoughtful? Like, whether you want to list them or talk about one.
Yeah. Well, I just like Star Trek a lot. Like, let's say just Next Generation, for instance, and maybe a little bit of Voyager and Deep Space Nine. But in these shows, the whole point of them is that you're in a society that's a little bit post-capitalist. You have to share resources. You're doing some exploration. You can't mess with people. Sometimes you have to help people out. There's some diplomacy. You're not solving things with firepower. You're solving with diplomacy. But the whole point of why the ship keeps surviving, or it gets destroyed, but how the people keep surviving, is there's enough diversity on the ship And not just diversity in, like, there's kind of a social class diversity, there's ethnic diversity, there's a species diversity, and there's a human-machine diversity. So you have the whole machine, the whole spaceship gets knocked out, and then Data is still awake, and he saved the ship. And then sometimes Data takes over the system. Like, for instance, there's security issues, right?
So you like Data as sort of like a really thoughtful cyborg, as opposed to the Borg that shows up in Star Trek a lot.
Well, the Borg are trying, they have usually singular weaknesses, as it was proven, right, with Locutus of Borg being able to, like, destroy everything. Because they're absorbing everything, but they're becoming an all-one culture, which is what I'm afraid of, the planet becoming an all-one thing. You know, you go to all these different countries and they all have the car and they all want this and they all want meat and they all want, you know, it's like, wait. Let's retain the individuality of these cultures, because it's not only interesting, but, like, why do we want a planet where everything is exactly the same? That's super boring. Like, that's the singularity. Like, we thought that the internet was fun because we had cats and newspaper. But now we're in, like, the top moment of the singularity, and it's depressing, and we're messing with each other, and we're online, and we're ad-sponsored misery. And I don't think that's a great singularity. Like, I think the diversity is much more interesting, and because you're always surprised, and you can always explore, and you can always learn. So, you know, Data is one example, but Geordi's another example, because he has better vision than everybody else. It's not just restorative light glasses. He can see all sorts of stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's
where what do you think?
I think that's where it's interesting, because I think there's this trope in a lot of science fiction where it's the augmentation is about making you more human. And I find that, like, kind of, like, boring now, because I don't see humans as, like, any sort of object of perfection. And or anything to sort of, like, necessarily go after. I actually really like River Tam from Firefly and Serenity. Mm. Totally augmented, grappled with a lot of times with the ramifications of that augmentation a lot. Had human frailty on display alongside with the augmentation, and just was, like, imperfect from start to finish. Yeah. And I love that.
Isn't that why we like trees in nature? Because it's imperfect.
Yeah. And well, I mean, for me, it's like the sort of enhancements that I think were really thoughtful. I actually liked the depiction of the Borg a lot in Star Trek, specifically because of their ability to tap into a hive mind, which I think is something that is definitely not human, but I would be really fascinated to know what that's like. It's unfortunate that, you know, in that depiction, they're so evil. But
yeah, I think the original...
I would like it as more of like a
one culture's evil
thing
is another's culture.
In this series, I think it was that the Ferengi were supposed to be the villains, but then they became laughable, so then they had to have a really scary... I mean, I remember seeing TNG when it was first on air and watching it from, like, the age of two, right? My earliest memories are TNG, watching it at the foot of bed with my parents, and I remember seeing the Borg cube for the first time and flipping out. And part of my question is, like, are we becoming the Borg? Like, is this connection to this thing? Like, are
Maybe.
We becoming bacteria? Are we becoming, like, if we're all connected, what other things are all super connected?
Yeah.
Is it fungus? Like, what is it?
Maybe we are fungus.
Maybe we're fungus.
I'm going to leave it on that. Maybe we are fungus. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks. It was great.
So we left that discussion talking about how maybe we should all be fungus, or we are all fungus. I don't know. We were talking about cyborgs in space, and specifically how they can really range from everything to human augmentation to things that are post-human and completely unidentifiable as human.
That's what I really love about that conversation. Listening to you guys talk really expanded the definition of cyborg for me as I relate to it in popular culture. You know, when I watch a movie like RoboCop or even a show like Star Trek, those end up being pretty narrow definitions of cyborgs. And there's just so much to think about in that space.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we really dove into how there's a lot of different depictions that we've seen in film, but really there's actually a lot more out there that we haven't seen in film and that I really hope we get to see with future films and people get more funding to do interesting movies that explore these sort of unknown areas of cyborgs.
Well, let us know out there what you think about cyborgs in space or even in popular media, whether there's a portrayal of cybernetic cyborgs that we don't traditionally think of as cyborgs, and we'd love to know your thoughts in the comments below. And remind you that Offworld is also available as a podcast. If you go to tested.com/offworld, you can find our backlog library there. Lots of great episodes, fun discussions, Errol, you have with our guests. And thank you all for listening.